It's either Friday the 11th of February or Saturday the 12th of February, depending on when you're listening. 2016. Happy birthday to Keith Appling. Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and Fantasy Punisher. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like Fantasy Punisher and sponsor the podcast for a day, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can be that sponsor. Fantasy Punisher, thank you for leaving your review and becoming today's sponsor. Moneyball is also the sponsor of this podcast. They are Australia's best daily fantasy sports site. So if you're in Australia or if you're in New Zealand, make sure you're checking out Moneyball and getting involved in all of the contests that are running over there when the NBA kicks back off next week. Today's podcast, a little bit of a different one. Not going to be doing the usual rundowns and previews because there's no games to preview. I'm not going to review the two games from yesterday. There's nothing really all that exciting to happen there. What we've got today, I'm going to talk about the Facebook and Instagram contests from yesterday. And we've also got an interview with the first NBA player to appear on the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball podcast, Joe Ingles, which runs for about 20 minutes. I think you'll find some interesting stuff in there. Well, I hope you do. Anyway, let me know what you think. The Instagram stuff we had yesterday, it was Greg Monro. How many points is Greg going to score? He scored only 12, so that obviously was not a great night for Greg. And no one got it right. On Facebook, we went for how many combined points, rebounds, and assists will Russell Westbrook get? The answer was 42, and we have another repeat winner back-to-back. Swan Lin gets it again for the second night in a row. So congratulations to Swan. We'll obviously kick these back off when the NBA starts back up next week. Got this podcast today. We're going to be having a first-round rookie review podcast. Well, not even first-round, probably just a rookie review podcast coming in the next couple of days. A Dynasty Roundtable podcast coming, and a few more throughout the week before the games start back up. So make sure you're looking out for those and still downloading and still listening and still watching if you're on YouTube, as many of you are watching now. Now, I spoke to Joe a little bit earlier, so I'm going to play that interview for you now, and then I'll be back at the end of that to wrap up the show. So let's get stuck into that interview with Utah Jazz forward Joe Ingles. All right, I'm joined now by Utah Jazz second year forward Joe Ingles on the podcast. Joe, thanks for coming on.
No worries, thanks for having me.
No, not a problem. It's great to have you on. Now you're a player who's had a pretty interesting basketball career. You started off playing in Australia, obviously went across to Spain, played a bit in Israel. Then you came across to the NBA, had another go with the Clippers. And I think most people, especially back here, thought that you'd stick with the Clippers, but you got cut before the regular season started.
Yeah.
How did that feel? And what reasons did they give for cutting you? Because I thought you played pretty well during the preseason, and most people were thinking, yeah, you're a big chance to make the roster. What was their thought process, their reasoning behind making that cut just before the season started?
I mean, like you said, it was obviously a timed kind of decision, and obviously where the team I went to was we obviously did our due diligence on where would be a good fit and what we thought would be a good fit for me and the way I play. I'm not a guy, obviously, that's going to go out and shoot 15, 20 shots and have 30 points. So trying to work it out, and we thought that was a really good fit, and they did too. And the other good kind of situation was it was only me and one other guy that were fighting for the last spot originally. And at the end of the day, I think, like you said, I felt like I did enough and did well enough to make the team. It really came down to the end. The other guy was a point guard, and what they told me was at the time, Jordan Farmer, who was the backup to Chris Paul, got injured. This was obviously a few days before the season started, and they, obviously, which I understood, can't go into the season with one point guard. And as good as Chris Paul is, he still needs someone to back him up. And, that was basically what I got told, was obviously with Farmer out for a bit of a extended time at the start of the year, was that they needed another point guard, and that was about it, really. They thanked me and obviously said that they thought I'd did enough to kind of make the team. The injury obviously didn't help at that was basically the only thing I got told, really.
That the other, now, from memory, the other point guard was Jared Cunningham, wasn't he, who's now on the Cavs?
So he was actually been a bit of a... I actually played against him when I was in Barcelona. He got drafted by Dallas, and I played him there. And then we were the Clippers team together. The year after, I'd obviously re-signed with Utah for 2 years, and he actually came with our summer league team with the Jazz, and we cut him from our summer league team, and then he went to Cleveland, and obviously ended up, has obviously just made that team. So it's been a bit of a circle, but we've bumped into each other a fair bit the last few years.
Yeah, it's definitely. Now, you were mentioning about backup point guards. Now, you're not obviously not a point guard, but you do play that point forward sort of role. Is that the role that you're comfortable with? Is that the role that when now you've signed with the Jazz, obviously, and you've got a new contract at the start of last season? Is that the role that you want to play? Is that the role they push you into playing, or think this is how you're going to be able to make a role in the NBA, or is that where you're comfortable playing at all times, being that sort of distributor and 3-point shooting forward?
Yeah, probably a bit of all of that, to be honest. It's probably been throughout my kind of career, I've always been that pass-first guy. I think the early days when I was playing with the Dragons in Melbourne, I had Shane Gill as my coach. He was probably the one that first really started to push me and make me probably think about it more. And I guess threw me in the fire a little bit. I used to play a lot of points. Dragons as our kind of backup those first 2 years. That was probably the first time that I probably even really thought about it and obviously played some of it. And then as I have kind of gone on, it's just kind of progressed that way. It hasn't been anything set or spoken about. I think it's just, like I said, with the pass first kind of mentality to just throw me in there sometimes, and whenever guys are injured or whatever, it's kind of been, especially the last few years in Barcelona and now here even with Dante being out and recently with Trey Burke being injured, just kind of get thrown in there a little bit. It's something I'm comfortable with. I don't want to do it the full game. I don't think it's the best interest for the team if I'm doing it for the full game, but I don't mind spurts in there. And I think a lot of teams these days have systems that a lot of guys can just rebound and bring it up. With the national team especially, I've always been kind of playing through that 1-4, I guess. And, just kind of, like I said, just kind of been thrown in there a little bit, to be honest.
Well, now in Utah, like you guys have got plenty of guys who do that. So, Gordon Hayward does that. Alec Burks does that. Rodney Hood's doing more of it now as well. So I'd say probably in the NBA, the Jazz are a team who distribute the ball handling the most out of everyone. Is that something that Quinn Snyder goes out and says, we want everyone to be able to handle it and to distribute it, and we can just mix up looks, or is it just the way that the talents come together?
Yeah, we definitely talk about it. I think, like you said, we've got that that talent and the personnel that can do it. A lot of teams don't have it. Either the guys aren't comfortable or it's not kind of in their DNA to do that and be able to run an offense. Like you said, with Gordon and Alec, when he gets back from his injury, and Rodney are all not only talented players on the court, but IQ-wise really good as well. And we have a big emphasis on who rebounds it can take it. So we can all run multiple offenses from one of our wings or the point guard bringing it up. And our coach is great with that and great with emphasizing it and even encouraging us to do it. So it is a big focus in what we do. And we think it's something that can help our team against other teams, just being able to not have to give it the point guard every time to run something and set it up. And we did it last year, the second half of the year, when me, Gordon, and Dante were starting together. And we could all play on the ball and all play off the ball. So it was a good mix. And now Rodney's gotten over his health stuff from last year and injuries, and he's playing great. And then obviously Alec and stuff as well, throw into that same position.
Now, speaking of Rodney, like, he's having a fantastic season. I was talking about it on the podcast during the week, as if you look back at the 2014 draft, I would say that if you were to redraft it now, he would go in the top five. So he's been a massive steal for you guys. How much growth has he had this year? And do you guys see it and go, or could you see it straight away and go, this guy's going to be really good? Or is it just really sort of come on over that last maybe month of last season and really the last 2 months or so here?
No, it's probably been something from the start. I think from I mean, I obviously wasn't there in pre-season being with the Clippers, but from when I got there and seeing him on a day-to-day basis, and I mean, he's one of the hardest working guys I've ever played with. He puts in a hell of a lot of time on and off court, watching film, and obviously on court doing what he does. And, I agree. I think he's definitely the biggest steal. There's no doubt about it. I think if he did get taken earlier, we'd be obviously be in a different position. Because, like you said, the last month of last year and obviously the majority of this season, he's played at a really high level. And I think the only thing that stopped him last year was injuries. And I think that was just the process of learning to become a professional. He'd obviously played at Duke and played a quarter of the amount of games. And he had a few, he was nothing kind of major. It was just a few niggling injuries that would always kind of held him back. And I think he ended up missing probably half the season last year. But every time he played, you could kind of see that star in him. And he had a hell of an off season this year and that obviously showed. And with that, we were able to bring Alec Burks off the bench, which is obviously a huge punch for us to have a guy who averages 15 and kind of three or four assists and three or four rebounds a game to come off the bench. And obviously now with Rodney starting, it's a good weight off Gordon's shoulders as well to not have to carry that load every game.
Yeah, definitely. Now, you mentioned Rodney and his injuries. There was an article that came out on ESPN a couple of days ago talking about the stresses of the NBA schedule and, you know, putting up statistics about fatigue, and you know, I think that the one they highlighted was that the dunking in the last quarter is 20% less than you have in every other quarter due to fatigue, the amount, because people, you know, they can't put their legs up, and the Spurs, I think, have had the lowest amount of dunks out of every team over the last 4 or 5 years or something like that, because they deliberately go out not to do it to conserve energy. What's your thought on the schedule? How taxing is it on your body to have to play back-to-backs to finish a game, then travel to a new city and arrive, you know, 4 or 5 in the morning, whatever time you arrive? How much of a drain does it take on your body?
Yeah, it's a brutal schedule. I think if you look at it, I think it averages on 3.5-4 games a week on average throughout the year. And I think a lot of it, I mean, you've really got to know what you need to do individually. Guys are different. I mean, I've played with guys that are happy to eat whatever and they can still have enough energy. Some guys need to spend food, some guys need to sleep more and whatever it is. And I think each individual needs to know and learn pretty quickly. And I think Rodney was one of those guys that was learning and probably not doing everything possible to not, obviously he's not trying to get hurt, but just to stop those niggles. And everyone, I mean, this is my 10th year professionally and last year was my 9th and I had to learn the same thing, especially that back half of the year when I was starting and playing pretty heavy minutes. It's something that you can get used to. I think you kind of adjust to it just by being in it and being a part of it. But the back-to-backs are brutal. Obviously, there's stretches where you play 4 and 5 nights or 3 and 4 nights. And, at the end of the day, it is what it is, and it's our job, and then we've obviously got to get out there and do our job and do our best to win the game. But I think a lot of people look from the outside in thinking that we have a pretty luxurious life, and obviously a lot of it is, but the schedule-wise is brutal, and especially, I mean, for young guys, the other side of that is also being away from family and friends kind of factors in as well. So it's tough. Like I said, it is what we do and we get paid to do, so you do it and you get through it. But yeah, it's always nice to have this all-star break and then obviously a bit of rest in the off-season.
So obviously, yeah, thanks for coming on the podcast during your vacation time, Joe. Now, you mentioned that basketball's a job to you. You know, everyone that's listening to this podcast, I assume, has a job, and you know, when they're doing their job and something is, you know, not working to what they want, or you know, it's boring them or pissing them off or whatever it is, they think about basketball, they think about the NBA, they think about managing their fantasy teams. You're in the NBA, you're playing basketball, that's your job. When something's hard, injury rehab, getting up, flying in early, what do you do to distract yourself? Where does your brain go?
Not very far, to be honest. I think sometimes, I mean, I'm lucky that my wife does, I mean, some people don't have anyone with them and family and stuff. My wife is a netballer and goes back and forth, but I'm lucky to have her there for a majority of the season and a lot of family and friends. But really not much. I think, like we were just talking about with the schedule and stuff, it is really nice to actually just have a day off. And I mean, I've had days off this year, and obviously in the past, you literally, by the time you get up and realize you're up and about, it's already 3 or 4 o'clock and you've done nothing. And they're the days you like. It's nice to be home and be in your own bed and just kind of relax and watch TV. And I've got a dog back home. I'd love him to be over, but it's just, you're in that day-to-day life and kind of just do regular. So, you know, you go and do your food shopping and pick up your laundry and stuff like that. You just do that day-to-day stuff. And obviously, it's not really as relaxing as being able to do something else, but I guess it's just a part of our life. Is when you do have that day off, you're trying to fit in all the things you haven't been able to do when you've been on the road for the last 7 days or something like that. So, a lot of us, you know, I mean, Salt Lake's not a huge city, and a lot of us will just go to the movies, go to dinner, just try and kind of keep as busy as you can without obviously fatiguing yourself.
Yeah, that all makes complete sense. Now, I told mutual friend of ours, Trent Copeland, that you were coming onto the podcast, and he had a couple of questions that he wanted me to ask you. And the first one he wanted me to ask you is, why are you so bad at FIFA?
Oh my gosh, he's delusional, that man. I knew that was coming too. He came to visit him last year, and obviously on my days off, he was in there. We played a little bit of that. To my recall, I'm pretty sure I beat him with the Indian national team one time, and he was playing as Barcelona or something like that. So, he's terrible. The other thing that he knows that I can do is that I'm actually better bowler than him.
What sort of bowler are you?
I'd probably be left arm over the wicket, fast, medium fast.
Okay.
Definitely a lot quicker than him with that weak lower back that he's got. but we've got a few little bets and challenges going on that we'll probably get done this off season. Before we start preparing for the Olympics, so I'll have to let you know let you guys know how I do.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Now, another thing that Trent wanted me to bring up with you, he says that you're the best inbound passer in the league. Is there any truth to that?
I knew that was coming too. I agree with that statement at least. We were actually just talking about the other day. I think most people that watch the Dallas games and have seen a lot of the late situations. Coach would throw me in there to get the ball in and inbound it. There's been games this year and then last year that I wouldn't play at all, majority of the game, and then I'd get thrown in and inbound the ball with 15 seconds to go in a tied game or something like that. We were just joking about it the other day. It's kind of like the punters or whatever, or special teams in a football team, that we reckon that one of the 15 player spots should always be an inbounder for an NBA team, so I've always got a job, and I can just come in and inbound the ball. But it's something I've probably just kind of fallen into here. I haven't really been in this situation before, but I think obviously coach trusts me inbounding it in that situation, and it's a lot harder and stressful than probably what people think, because if you don't get it in, you pretty much lose. I've just been thrown into it, and it's something I actually, now that I've done it a lot through last season, I've actually really enjoyed it, and being able to even step in and make a couple of shots at the end of the game as well. So, it's a bit of fun, and I definitely believe I'm the best inbounder in the league. So,
well, we've
especially
seen,
with 30 seconds or less.
We've seen a few times this season that people bring the ball in those late game situations, just don't get it in time, and it causes that turnover. And that's brutal. Not even being able to get a shot off. Like that's what you say is it's a real point, that they need someone who practices that situation and is good at it. Because I can't think of the players who did it a couple of times, but I remember I think I saw Derek Rose do it once, just not being able to get the ball in the 5 seconds, and then the ref waves it off, turnover, and game's over. So it is a really important part of being able to execute those late game situations, and I'm pretty sure that a lot of teams don't pay quite enough attention to that.
Yeah, and I think as well, the thing that people probably don't realise too much or probably take too much notice is that the last minute or 30 seconds of the game when you're in those situations, is the referees let you play and they let guys set moving screens and guys are holding. I mean, there's times where guys are wrapped around Gordon when he's trying to get open, two arms wrapped around him. They let you play. I think it's good. I think that those situations situations, you want your best players to get open, and you want your best defenders to be able to have every chance to stop. So it is stressful. It's one of those things that we actually go through it a lot. Our last 5-10 minutes of shoot around every day is like late game situations, just to see what kind of stuff we'll run, or if we've run something that hasn't really worked, and our coaches will actually defend and hold and grab just to get the players used to it. And I'm over there inbounding it and have one of our coaches jumping on the ball. And I have had a couple of 5 seconds. I had one against Chicago that I didn't get it any time. We didn't have any timeouts left, so I had a 5-second call and we lost that game. So it is a shitty feeling when you actually don't get the ball and then 19,000 people are looking at you that you didn't get it in. But yeah, something that we actually spend a lot of time on, and that makes me feel a lot more comfortable, obviously, in that situation when I have to do it.
Well, it worked the other day when you guys played the Mavericks and had that set the game to overtime late, and then got the late win as well. So obviously it worked out in that situation. Joe, I've got one more question for you before you go, if you've got time for one more.
Yep.
All right, now we know your team. There's a lot of young players on this team. A really good young Gordon, you mentioned Derek, Doak Favors, Rudy Gobert, Rodney Hood, who we've talked about. Who's the next guy on this team that maybe some of us don't know about, that is ready to take this next step up to become the next sort of household name in this Jazz core players?
I think when you look at the team and the core of that team, with those guys you mentioned, and obviously a healthy Dante in there, and Alec Burks is still young. I think that all those guys are, obviously Dante's 20, but all those other guys you mentioned are 23 to 26 years old. And I think we're still bottom five in age or something in the league. So I don't think anyone in particular, in terms of someone that nobody knows about, I think those 4 or 5 guys, the longer they stick together and the more they play together, are going to get better and better. Gordon at 26 has still got a lot to improve on, and obviously he's averaging 20-odd a game and still can get a lot better, I believe. Rodney Hood, like we mentioned, is only his second year in the league and has improved night and day from his first and second year. Derek Favors, 6-7 years into his career, and still got a ton to go. Rudy Gobert's the same, with obviously defensively what he does, but he's still got an offensive game that he needs to pick up, and he knows that. And same with all those other guys. They've all, I guess the really good thing about them is that they understand what they're good at and what they're not, and they all work really hard at getting better. And I mean, no one's probably seen us throw the ball to Rudy in the post to go and get a bucket, and that's something that he knows that he needs to develop if he wants to be a dominant player in the league. I think the longer that group stays together, it's going to be pretty exciting times for the Jazz, because it's just a really young core group, and obviously, like, they're getting a healthy Dante back when he's back from his injury, and putting him in there with those other 4 or 5 guys, a pretty exciting future for the next 10 years if they can keep them all together.
Yeah, I agree. The Jazz is one of the most exciting young teams in the league. I think you guys have got a very good chance of making the playoffs this year, and I think that's going to be fantastic, obviously, for the group to have that playoff experience as they grow and develop together. So good luck, Joe, for the rest of the season. Good luck if you do make the playoffs, which I'm pretty confident you will if you keep going with the way that you're doing, running this nice little run of form at the moment. And thank you for coming on.
No worries at all. Thanks for having me, and hopefully we can have this chat again when we are in the playoffs.
No problem. I'd love to do that. Thank you.
No worries. Thanks a lot.
All right, guys. That was the interview with Joe Ingles. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Maybe that's something we can get going throughout more of the season, get some more players, some more NBA people on the podcast. I thought it was pretty interesting. I enjoyed having the chat with him. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to it. That's it for today's show. Just a short one. Hope you guys are ready to watch the rookie sophomore rising stars challenge, whatever it's called these days. The 3-point contest coming up in the next day or so. The dunk contest, all-star game, all that sort of stuff. Enjoy. Don't make too many panic moves in your fantasy team. With nothing happening, this is a great time of the year where people will overanalyze their team. Look, analyze your team, for sure. Don't overanalyze it, though, because you'll find people who will make 3 or 4 or 5 waiver wire moves without anything changing, without any games happening. And there might be a panic move in there with someone getting dropped that shouldn't be dropped, or a panic trade, or, you know how I talk about people having itchy trigger fingers a lot? People have itchy trigger fingers. Trade deadline's coming up. you'll see people, you know, just, well, nothing's happening. I'm not accumulating any stats. I need to do something. I need to make a trade. And maybe one out of every five trade offers will be a terrible one for them, and you might be able to benefit. So keep an eye on that sort of thing. Don't be the one who makes the panic moves, obviously. And really assess where your team is. Are you making playoffs? Are you going to be comfortably in? See who you're battling against. Who are the teams who are going to be in? How does my team match up? What moves do I need to make sure that I can beat those top teams? It might mean that you get a loss in the next 2 weeks as you build your team with a certain, you know, build and a certain punt focus to beat the teams who you will be facing in the playoffs. But if you lose to the team that's 8th or 9th and they're not getting in the playoffs, whilst making your team better to face the team that's 1 and 2, that's worth it. And that's something you need to look at without sacrificing a playoff spot, obviously, but making sure that you can solidify your team, rationalize your team down to beat the teams that you're going to have to play when the playoffs start. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or on YouTube. And if you are on iTunes, leave a review. It helps the show out immensely. You guys know that, and you've been great with doing that so far. So thank you to everyone who has done that. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @redrock_bball. And the Facebook page is facebook.com/redrockbasketball. BasketballMonster.com's Twitter account is @BaskMonster. I suggest you follow that for every single late-breaking news and injury and lineup changes and all that sort of stuff. And of course, the website is BasketballMonster with all the DFS tools and seasonal long tools to help manage your team. Over on Hardwood Paroxysm, there's a stack of new articles going up, alternate all-star pieces, roundtables, a lot of stuff happening over at Hardwood Paroxysm as well. We are done for today's podcast, guys. Remember, there will be plenty of shows throughout the All-Star break, so don't go away anywhere. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.